Hello, my name's Sebastian Folks, and I'm staying at Civitella Ranieri in a very nice little studio up outside the castle. And I'm going to read a little bit from a book called Human Traces, which came out some years ago. It's set at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, and it's about the early days of psychiatry. And one of the main characters, Thomas, is himself a doctor, who at a very young age develops signs of senile dementia, rather, before you would expect it to happen. And at a dinner in his childhood home, a lot of his friends and family and people that he's worked with over the years are gathered together. And this is a bit when he first realizes how much he's struggling. Through the shifting candlelight, Thomas could make out the face of Hans smiling nervously, though he'd been placed compassionately close to Daisy. Kitty was far away, but looked up at that moment, and her silver-rimmed glasses caught the light as she smiled up the table at him. There was Jacques sitting next to Martha, who had always secretly adored him, and there was Valad pontificating to poor blind Mary about oil painting. Almost everyone who had meant something to him in his life was gathered there, it occurred to him, all except Faverill, whose short obituary notice he had read in the newspaper a few days early. A distinguished asylum superintendent, the paper had called him, who had a strong sense of the direction he wanted psychological medicine to take as the new century approached. Sense of direction, he would have laughed at that, thought Thomas, the chartless helmsman steering by the stars. Who else was there in the shifting light? Charlotte doing her best with that man who smoked cigarettes, dear Daisy and Mary, and his niece, Lydia, and her many children whose names he could not now remember. And then through the shadow there, the flicker and glow, caught the chin of someone else he did not know, a man a little older than he was, though not unlike himself, now he came to think of it, in features. He seemed very familiar with Lucy, and he had a rather proprietorial air. He kept passing the decanter round, urging people to drink, then ordering the maids to clear as though he owned the place. "You haven't drunk your soup, Mr. Thomas." "What?" Thomas looked down in surprise. He did not remember being given soup. People expected so much of him these days. "Shall I take it away, then?" "Yes. May. It is May, isn't it?" "Yes, love." "Thank you." At the end of the main course, Edgar stood up and made a brief speech of welcome. Thomas looked at him curiously, then scanned the faces of those he knew. No one seemed to think it odd that this fellow was making a speech, so Thomas said nothing about it. He kept a speech of his own in his pocket, which Kitty had helped him to prepare that afternoon. Thomas looked down the table and saw her face earnestly looking at him. "Go on," she mouthed silently. He stood up and coughed. I also want to say something. We all appreciate the hospitality and kindness shown us by our hosts. Kitty's smiling face was still on him. It was all right. "Of course, what Valad said about me was absolute piffle. Unkind acts, ungracious, was it? Once in Africa I lost my temper with a man, and many other times..." He looked up and forced himself to regroup. "Yes, yes. Just have to say, while I am still able, a sort of goodbye, or at least an au revoir. Some weeks ago I suffered a peculiar experience. I do not wish to go into it, except to say that I appeared to lose my memory. I was in a police station with no recollection of how I had got there. I was not unhappy, I just did not know what was going on. I was like King Lear. Methinks I should know you and know this man, yet I am doubtful, for I am mainly ignorant. What place this is, and all the skill I have, remembers not these garments, nor I know not where I did lodge last night. Anyway, to cut a long story short, I've been to see a very distinguished gentleman at the hospital in Queen Square. It appears that I am in the early stages of some kind of senile or pre-senile dementia. Rather interestingly, it's been named after Alois Alzheimer, with whom my colleague Franz Berntaler once studied with Franz Nissl, another formidable talent at the microscope. Oddly enough, Berntaler assured me in his last letter that it was not in fact Alzheimer who first described the disease, but his mentor, Emil Kraepelin. This may be the first time in medical history that a discovery has been voluntarily assigned by one scientist to another. Thomas looked down the table at all the strange faces in the orange light. Or, he said, perhaps Kraepelin just forgot. He consulted the notes that Kitty had made on a postcard. So, yes, I just wanted to say to all of you, yes, a most interesting ailment, as a matter of fact, in which the plaques among the neurons are visible under a Zeiss lens, without staining, though France tells me you get the best results with magenta red and indigo carmine and... He looked back at his postcard. It said, age. Yes, age. I am rather young to have this sort of thing, though perhaps 60 does not seem so young to the children at the far end of the table. The truth is that we know very little about this illness. We know very little about anything, as a matter of fact. Never mind. It is really not important. It is just that one day I may no longer know your name, and I ask you to forgive me if I pass you on the street or on the stairs, and my face does not light up with love or recognition. Please forgive me. I shall no longer be myself. I am going into a dark country, and I very much wanted to say goodbye to those I have loved before I go. My dear Jacques, whose dreams of greatness I so passionately shared from the moment he embraced me on a beach somewhere in France. Sonia, dear God, what a sister you have been. I remember a boat in Deauville, and my own family, what can I say? He gazed once more down through the mist of faces until he saw the features of the woman he had loved, no longer young, but red and twisted with grief, shining with tears. I have been blessed beyond what any man could hope or wish for, said Thomas. All I ask now is somewhere safe to live. I must pull in sail and lower my sights from the horizon. I am quite content to do so, because I have been so fortunate in my life. I always felt that if I had to make a speech like this, I should find some Shakespearean eloquence. But it is too late, and the plain words will have to do. As a doctor, I have achieved absolutely nothing. Nothing at all, though God knows I tried. But in love I have been rich. Once, long ago, I finished a lecture in another place by saying we should try to make our lives a hymn of thanks, or some such phrase. I don't think it was a very memorable phrase, even to someone with my difficulties. I shall do my best to follow my own advice. All I ask is for your forgiveness. He looked one last time down the table of anxious faces. My mind may not know you, he said, but in my heart you are remembered.